Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and as usual, I'm speaking to you from the borough of Queens in New York City. It is the 30th day of August, 2022. Do like to remind you, I write a newsletter that covers mostly mining shares, exploration companies, as well as economic situations. They discuss the economy and where I think that how that might impact the various markets that we cover in my newsletter. Miningstocks.com is the place to go to subscribe to my letter. Also, like to mention, J. Taylor Media is a place that you can go to listen to this show afterwards. Always go to J. Taylor Media. Or YouTube, or other places, of course, Voice America as well. You can listen to it live, and shortly thereafter, Voice America has the show available there. I do want to thank all of you for listening to the show and invite you to send along whatever questions or comments you have about this show. We always like to hear from our listeners. Whatever comments you have, we'd like to hear what you have to think about the show. Also want to thank our sponsors, as always, because without them, there would be no show. Today's sponsors, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, El Oro Resources, SK Mining, Timberline Resources, Lion One Metals. And I do want to welcome Reyna Gold Corp as a new sponsor to the show. Reyna Gold has a district-scale gold exploration program underway in northwestern Mexico, where some 50 million ounces of gold have been discovered over the past 30 years or so. The geology is basically an extension of the same system that hosts major amounts of gold in California, Nevada, and Arizona. And most significant of all, from my viewpoint, is the fact that the company has two very strong technical advisors, namely Peter McGow and Douglas Kerwin, advising them. I'm looking forward to interviewing the management of this company on this show, perhaps as early as September 20th. It has been a very tough market for junior exploration companies. There's no doubt about that, as the price of gold has really not kept up with the CPI. Hedge fund manager Kyle Bass made an interesting comment on Adam Taggart's Wealthion interview last week, suggesting that the cryptocurrency crowd has replaced a large percentage of those investors who would otherwise be buying gold. While Kyle says he has about 2% of his family's wealth in gold, he is even much more bullish on the hydrocarbon markets, as well as anything mined from the ground required to electrify the global economy. He suggests that oil and gas stocks are enormously undervalued, and despite record profits for these companies, capital is still flowing out of the oil and gas sector as investors feel intimidated by an increasingly authoritarian Western government system that does not really support the life-sustaining oil and gas industries. The notion that we can go to renewables in Kyle's mind and in the mind of many other thinking people is just sort of absurd. But the winds of geopolitical change are certainly blowing harder and harder. While we in the West allow a rabid teenager like Greta Thunberg to scream at us with her infant temper tantrums to intimidate policymakers into destructive anti-science climate change policies, it seems that adversarial nations like China and Russia are not allowing any climate change rhetoric to destroy their economies. If the West is to survive, we better wake up fast, I think, because a huge number of nations around the world are abandoning the NATO bloc. Mining analyst John Tomazos reported this morning that the number of nations refusing to condemn Russia for its invasion into the Ukraine has increased from 52 on March 2, when Russia started their invasion, to 100 nations by April 7th. And before you become outraged by a refusal of nations to condemn Russia for its actions, it might be a good idea to remember that NATO has gone back on its promise not to add one inch of Eastern European territory after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now, that is something our military-industrial complex doesn't want to remind you of. Of course, that's propaganda, and every nation engages in it. I'm not saying it's unique to the United States. Certainly, Russia has its own propaganda in operation to lead the people to think what they want them to think as well. As David Stockman opined on my show back in March, that sanctioning Russia for going into the Ukraine would be, quote, to quote David, crazy as hell, end of quote, because he said it would hurt the West at least as much as it would hurt Russia. We are learning that David is right about that, as well as about his views on climate change and policies and how that's impacting in a very negative way our economy. Both are rapidly leading to, both of those policies directions are rapidly leading, I would argue, and many do argue, to economic death for the Western world, at least for the masses of people anyway, if not the elites, who all seem to be living pretty much like they always have, while asking the rest of us to sacrifice. Energy is an essential, is the probably the most essential commodity for any modern society at this point in time in history, and renewable forms of energy cannot replace hydrocarbons. Some nations are wisely retaining their nuclear policies or returning to those nuclear policies, and that is encouraging, but one wonders if it's not too little too late. Of course, those geopolitical actions, as well as the Biden economic policies of massive deficit spending, is leading to enormous inflation problems that in turn threaten our currency and the existing monetary system, which Russia and China aim to replace. And that leads me to today's show. We've titled today's show, Gold Beats Inflation and Treasury Yields Too. Keith Weiner and Michael Oliver return as guests today. The U.S. government hates gold because its rising price shines a light on the destruction of the dollar caused by the Federal Reserve and the federal government's deficit spending. The detractors of gold have long suggested that owning gold doesn't make sense because it doesn't provide any return on your investment. But they can't say that any longer because Monetary Metals now pays interest to small and large investors with as little as 10 ounces of gold to invest. Through Monetary Metals, investors can lease their gold or lend it and gain much higher real returns than you can get from buying U.S. Treasuries. While the nominal rates of interest received through the Monetary Metals program may be similar to those of Treasuries, gold's purchasing power over the longer term does not decline. So if you receive, say, 2.5% or 3% on your gold lease that you might do through Monetary Metals, unlike investing in treasuries that might give you the same yield, at least what you're getting paid back in, you're going to get paid back in your gold as well as interest is also paid in gold. That will not be a depreciating currency unlike the dollar. The dollar always, over the long run, always loses purchasing power. Since 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created, that has been a fact. Well, there were times, of course, during the Great Depression, when purchasing power actually increased while we still had a gold standard. But absent a gold standard, I feel it's 100% sure to say that your purchasing power will decrease over time. Keith Weiner will be with me to talk about the opportunities at Monetary Metals to gain yield from your gold investments and silver investments too, by the way. He'll be with me in the second half of today's show, and I want to ask Keith also for his forecast on gold. He certainly has a unique perspective on the gold markets that we want to hear about as well. We do have to go to commercial break now, but don't go away because Michael Oliver will be with us right after we come back to give us his latest assessment of the global economy and the markets that he considers to be most important. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Michael Oliver.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
You're
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Michael Oliver with me once again. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's good to be back, and it's always good to tell our listeners the place to go to sign up for your excellent newsletter, the one I really can't do without. And you know, once in a while when I don't get it, I send you an email and say, where is my newsletter? And you send it to me faithfully. Well, it is really a very important piece of information to factor into your investing decisions. And the place to go is olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Michael, I'd like to start off by asking you some sort of macro questions, which you might not always ask, but what is your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets at this stage?
I don't think we're headed for recession. I think we're headed for a depression. There's one factor that few people are discussing as part of the mix of the events here, and that's a technical one, but it's also fundamental. The distortions that we've seen from 2009 through 2021 in the stock market, especially the U.S. stock market, particularly the U.S. stock market, thanks to the Fed's QEs repeatedly and effectively interest rates at zero, free money, for a dozen years, we've never had a bull market, quote unquote, I call it bull, that lasted that long and involved that great of a percentage advance. You go back and look at 1923 to 29, look at mid-90s to 2000, look at the 2002 bear low to the 2007 bull peak. None of them were even approached the percentage gains the S&P saw. A sevenfold advance. And the NASDAQ 100 had a 16-fold advance. As a technician, knowing what also was underlying that, if you look at an M2 chart, you can see it, or look at a Fed funds chart, you can see, oh, that's what explains it. When that comes unraveled, and we think it's technically now broken, the bubble is broken, we define the breakage in January for NASDAQ, February for the S&P, turned major bearish at that point. I expect a bear trend, but the problem is we've broken a bubble that is the biggest in U.S. stock market history. Mm-hmm. The Fed thinks they're breaking inflation, and oh, yes, they are. I mean, they created a dozen years of massive inflation, and it went into the stock market instead of commodities. And so their actions, which are designed to, quote, break the stock market, commodity inflation, which is the narrow way they like to define it, it's politically acceptable, is breaking their stock market. It's also breaking muni bonds, high-yield corporate debt, real estate ETFs, et cetera, you name it. But those assets are breaking from the biggest bubble in U.S. history. Therefore, I think the consequences will be far greater than 2009, which everybody vividly remembers, which wasn't just the one percenters getting killed. It was the average guy on the street. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very negative thing. And though right now they like to cite numbers that make us look a little better than Europe and so forth, I don't think it's going to end up that way. Also, I see it globally. We see Europe in dire straits. They're likely in a recession. We know that. Even Bank of America says the U.S. is in one. Okay, China's not behaving well. No, they didn't have a bubble, so they're not going to break like we are. But their market is, they're having real estate problems of significance. Mm-hmm. So it's global. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not just U.S., so for the Fed to be looking at U.S. metrics is a joke. You think Europe can go down and China go into recession and we're not going to join them? So anyway, and again, because of the bubble nature of our market, I think the downside might even be labeled a depression at some point by those who are willing to admit such. What happens when that perception occurs? What does the central bank do? Well, yeah. We know what they'll do. They're going to go nuts. Back the other way, they'll have to. Otherwise, they'll have riots out front of the Fed building.
Yeah. Well,
so,
You know, that seems to be obviously what a lot of investors are. As soon as there's a little bit of shift in the wind that looks a little positive, they jump back into the market. They're sure that Powell is going to get in there and start doing what you're saying he's going to do. It's obviously a battle of wills here. The Fed wants people to stop buying stocks. Of course, they keep pushing money into the system, but they want to try to control inflation, I guess. And so they want people to think they're not going to cave. But what you're saying is ultimately they will. They have no choice but to do so.
Mandate, you know, unemployment's their other mandate. Wait till that shifts, and we think it will dramatically.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And Powell's been talking about the employment situation being so quote. Unquote strong. I'm not sure how strong it is. That's another issue. But Michael, given that we're
leisurely in hotels, okay,
not wealth creating industries actually. And I want to bring up something that Kyle Bass said on an interview. I just saw him talking about. He's just extremely bullish on. He says on the hydrocarbons. He notes that even though these companies are making record profits, there's still money coming out of those sectors because that is no new capital going in because everybody's intimidated and afraid to invest in those sectors. And he notes that he wants to own things, anything that's mined from the ground that is going to be required for electrification. Well, I would just say, you know, I wonder because there's this concept of malinvestment. I think you were hitting on it. The fact is that money went into the stock market, into all kinds of things. With low interest rates, certain kinds of sectors did extremely well, like the high-tech sector and those that don't have any earnings for the foreseeable future. But when interest rates start going up, people start wanting to know, start to look at the real companies, the companies that really produce wealth, I think, Michael. So oil and gas, starting with the minerals from the ground, the real basic wealth-creating industries have to be those things that are not so easy to do. You know, you push buttons and make money that way, you know. So So I guess what I'd like to ask you is what do you think now? You look at your technicals all the time, and you let your technicals do the talking, but you also have a very deep understanding of economics and the markets. You're a free market guy. You understand how these governments are interfering in markets, what damage and devastation they do to us. What do you think, given what we have now, where should we be focusing our investment dollars?
Well, I think Kyle's right. that's one place to focus is the energy sector, and I think natural gas is probably the next headline component there, not so much crude oil. But the issue for the world is not whether they even go a lot higher, it's whether they just hang around up here. Mm-hmm. We got bullish on natural gas above $2. And again, at 450, it's now trading between 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. We think it could go probably into the mid-teens. Wouldn't surprise us. Crude oil, we got bullish at 40. It's been oscillating either side of 100, down to mid-80s up to 110, let's say. And I think it's likely a range-bound situation for a while, but still at a very high level that is choking. It's choking to other factors, like factories, for example, being able to run, make profits, energy costs, and so forth. So I think it will sustain, and I think it probably has more to go. I think food commodities is another area to watch. I think there's a very good chance that the grains are going to attack on another major up leg. I would also watch sugar, something nobody's watching. So I think the commodity complex, which is only a year and a half into a bull trend, and it's only doubled the Bloomberg. And if you look back at the Bloomberg Commodity Index 20 years ago, let's say, we're in the middle of the range. So these people talking about we're at the extreme highs of inflation. Yes, when you measure it by the silly metric of how much increase versus last year, well, commodity prices a year ago or 2 years ago were depressed off the page. So it's quite easy to double commodity prices like that. We're only in the middle of the range going back to 20-some-odd years in the Bloomberg. So there's a lot more room to go. It is a very young bull market. It's only a year and a half old by our metrics. We get bullish in October 2020. Thought there would be a commodity explosion. In fact, there was. And I think what you've had over the last several months is congestion in that sector, in the commodity index, preparing for the next up leg. So I think there's more to come there, and I think Powell is going to be a total waste of time stopping that. He tries to liken himself to Volcker, but back in Volcker's time, when he took over the Fed had already been raising rates consistently for 2 years. Fed funds rates were constantly climbing. He joined the Fed and jacked them up to very high levels. But at that point, commodities had already tripled. They were 3 years old on the upside. Gold had gone from, you know, $100 to $850 during rising rate period, by the way, during the mid to late 70s. And only then did they peak, and I don't think it was due to Volcker. I think it was simply due to they were through. They had their massive bull market, and so that was the excuse. Well, they raised rates. Well, the rates were rising all during that time. So I think he's likening himself to that commodity inflation then. He's wrong. The thing that was inflated that he's busting is the stock market. The commodity market is by no means comparable to what it was in 1980, where it tripled over a three-year period. So he's got it all wrong, and that's fine. I mean, that's the way it is. You know, it's government, so don't expect more. So I think Kyle's right. I think you've got to look at real assets.
Well, obviously, and I mean, again, a lot of those, at least the big guys like Exxon and some of those are just making tremendous profits, record profits now.
Yeah, the government's complaining about it, you know.
And they're complaining. They probably like to, you know, say they're price gouging or something.
Let's go nationalize.
Well, let me ask you.
Right, you know.
Okay, so, Michael, you believe the, I guess the next shoe is dropping now on the equity market. It looks like it. Do you see?
Another 100 points down the S&P, and I think that'll get you. You get down around 3,900, and we're trading in the 3,900s right now. Because 3,900, I think the lows that we made just below 3,700 are coming out probably pretty soon, in which case the next leg commences. I'm not looking for a crash. Normal bear markets and stocks don't crash. They go to, you know, 10-15%, then they have their bear market rallies to suck in the longs, and then they go for another, you know, it's arduous. And I think it will be arduous and span the next year or two. But the consequence on the other side, I think the term recession might be retired at some point down there.
What about then, would you feel safe in, you know, someone that's not a trader, but somebody who has a little longer term perspective, going short on the equity markets, let's say through an ETF like SH,
have a long-term perspective, and don't buy puts that expire in 2 months. And
don't
get leveraged, and you know, and you might even consider a spread position. And frankly, if you'd have shorted the Nasdaq 100 in January, when we said, you know, or at the end of last year, we got bearish in January, and bought gold at the same time, you'd be losing right now about 7-8% in gold and making a high double-digit percent in NASDAQ on the short side. So your spread's working out quite good. I also think that gold and silver and the miners, which have been beat up a lot lately, but not gold so much, mainly silver and the miners, are – my bet is, personally, that's the place you want to be over the next year or two, because the those in control of the monetary situation worldwide, not just here, will go back to excess. They have to. They have no choice. That's what they were created for, supporting governments, funding governments, you know, and they – I think we've got political problems coming as well. I don't think there's any political outcome, for example, in the U.S. that's going to end quietly.
No,
period.
It doesn't.
No matter which side wins in this election or the 2024, I don't think there's any outcome that will end with calmness.
No,
I'm not going to predict what specifically I'm talking about, but – It's not going to be a good outcome. The division will get worse and worse. And anyway, so that's another factor that's, I don't think, being put into the people's thought process about outcome here.
Well, and then as long as though interest rates are rising and at least a portion of the market believes that Powell is serious and he's going to actually be the second coming of Volcker, I guess when there's that stance, it's things like gold comes under pressure. The dollar, being the senior currency, has been strong relative to the other fiat currencies.
I'm looking for
currencies.
The dollar to top. I'm going to put out a report today in some depth, and I suggest anybody who considers subscribing to NSA will send them that sample report, explaining how the dollar is sometimes correlated to gold and sometimes it is totally not correlated to gold. And we show charts to... Lately, it has definitely been negatively correlated to gold. The dollar has risen sharply. Gold has gone down since the March high. However, if you go back to 2020 through March of this year, in fact, they were in sync with each other. So, yeah. You know, it depends on what time frame you look at. But I think the dollar index has had its little orgy on the upside. And, yes, it's mostly the euro, which is 57% of the dollar index. And I think a lot of bets have been placed. I think the sentiment is overwhelmingly bullish on the dollar. But our technicals, which is what I'm looking at, not the contrary opinion, suggest that, no, we're in a very potentially negative situation for the dollar, such that if this attempted blow-off in the dollar, and by the way, prices are still very low compared to 20 years ago and so forth.
Right.
The dollar index keeps going lower by the decade. So all the talk of the new high dollar for 20 years, yeah, after 20 years has been depressed. But I think if the dollar downticks even a couple points from here, it's trading 108.80. I think you see 106, it's over. And I think a lot of people will be shocked by that. And I think gold will probably go the other way at that point, back to the upside.
It would seem to me that what gold needs and silver probably and maybe some of the other commodities, what they need is to see this pivot, the pivot that everybody's anticipating. But does, I guess Powell's going to keep...
the Fed pivot?
Yeah.
That could be. The dollar is a problem, too, for the central banks because, frankly, it's killing the Europeans and the Japanese in terms of their ability to buy energy and food because their currencies are depreciating compared to ours. I think the notion of reserve currency will be gone in a year or two.
Wow.
I don't think we'll end up with a world where, you know, it's, it used to be the British pound sterling, and then you know, now it's the dollar, and I think that's going to end. I think we'll have multiple currencies that will be competing for that sort of status. And a lot of things are fragmenting, and I think that notion of a sort of a monopoly currency will also go by the way.
Right. Do you think gold might play a role in that, Michael?
I think it would. Definitely think it would. And so it's going to be a very interesting time ahead, but it's not a normal downturn in the stock market nor in the economy. This is something much bigger than anybody's talking about.
Right. This is a depression, not a recession, you say.
That's my bet is that the word comes back into use again.
Well, it's not something we're eagerly looking forward to, but we want to be ready, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to share your thoughts with us, Michael.
Thank you, Jay.
Always great to have you. Okay, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Keith Weiner will be with me to talk about monetary metals and the products they have. You know, you can earn interest on your gold that's at least as good as the Treasury interest that you receive these days by buying Uncle Sam's debt. And you get paid back in gold, of course, and so you don't lose your purchasing power while you get that interest, unlike the Treasury. So Keith will be with us to talk about that, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again Keith Weiner. He is the founder of Monetary Metals. As an Austrian economist, Keith brings with him a unique view of the metals markets. He founded Monetary Metals. That's a company that is proving anti-gold naysayers wrong they've always suggested that investing in gold was a kind of a dumb idea because you don't get any return, any yield, any sort of return on your investment. Well, Keith is proving that that is wrong with monetary metals. They're paying interest on leases and bonds that are at least as good as the U.S. Treasury. And, of course, you get it back. When you get paid back in your gold and you get your interest paid on gold, it is in real money, real non-depreciating money, and unlike the treasuries, which, of course, we can count on losing value over time. So it's really great to have Keith, and I would suggest that you go to J. Taylor Media. That's a website of mine. There's a rotating banner there. If you click on that, it will take you right through to the monetary metals website, and you can learn more and perhaps more than what Keith will have time to talk about with me right now. But I want to thank you, Keith, for joining me today. It's good to have you again.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
You know, I just maybe like to start off by asking you sort of a general macro question. What is your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
So in order to answer that, I kind of have to take a step back and talk about the Fed sort of as this bipolar, dysfunctional creature. And it has two modes. The mode that everybody loves because it has rising asset prices and rising consumption is a mode where they're pumping out more credit at cheaper and cheaper rates. And that is necessary because of the way the monetary system is designed to keep the economy going. But it also is fueling malinvestment, consumption of capital, and we can get into why I say those things if there's time. But it's fueling all kinds of bad stuff. And the development of what I'm not a fan of John Kenneth Galbraith, but he coined this term the bezel, which roughly means the difference between the asset values that everybody thinks they have and are holding on their books versus what's really there. And so you get this greater and greater disparity as the Fed is pumping up asset prices, which makes people feel wealthier, which they call the wealth effect, which isn't real wealth, obviously. For instance, you get the rise of what are called zombies. Now, a zombie is not defined by some fringe alt finance, site. It's defined by the Bank for International Settlements,
right?
The central banker's central bank. And they define a zombie basically as a company whose profits are less than their interest expense. So a zombie wouldn't exist at all, but for cheaper and cheaper credit being pumped out in greater and greater volumes. Anyways, as the zombies rise, the malinvestment rises, the bezel grows, the Fed gets to the point where, and maybe throw in some rising consumer prices, which is happening for other reasons, which we can get into if there's time, the Fed suddenly decides, like whatever tick goes off in a bipolar, a schizophrenic mind, that now it has to switch to the other mode, which is to cause the bust. And so then they pull credit back, interest rates rise, and they, they think this will be the cure for zombies and all manner of malinvestment, which it probably is if they could let it go on long enough. At the same time, it's also pulling credit back from, all parts of the economy, including the productive sectors. And that's the phase that we're in right now. I don't think they can last very long at this. I think the pain is going to become too intense for, the Fed to, withstand. But that can go on for a while before they finally cry uncle. And the thing that needs to be emphasized about this, for all that their pretense of analysis and data and equations, having a central bank is the politicization of credit. It's a political process that now decides these things. So when will the political process turn? Well, it's hard to predict, but it will, because it's going to get more and more painful, and powerful interest groups are going to demand that they reverse.
Well, it's interesting because David Stockman, who I've had on this show, sort of surprised me when he said he doesn't think that Powell is going to pivot anytime soon, because the Fed knows the population is getting angry as hell with all the inflation going on. And so many people, half the population lives hand to mouth, one paycheck to the next. And now with rising prices, they can't make ends meet. They're hitting their credit cards even more. So David's view was that the Fed won't pivot anytime soon. They know they've got a serious inflationary problem on their hands. They've got to keep it. They're seeing the people with all this anger, as David put it, coming at them with torches and pitchforks. Do you think that Powell will just keep the brakes on until he breaks something, and then there's going to have to be a pivot at that point? Or do you think, you know, politically the pressure just gets so great that, they've got it, they can't withstand keeping the brakes on?
You know, it's very hard for anybody, but certainly for myself, to try to predict, you know, political decisions.
Yeah.
So I try to keep myself in my swim lane, which is to look at the economics of it, which is much more, you know, governed by economics law.
Sure.
I think, you know, the Fed plays that caring about inflation. Of course, it's Orwellian. Their mission is defined as price stability. But right on their webpage, they say that, you know, prices rising relentlessly at 2% per annum is price stability. And I think Orwell would be looking down on this and either smiling or angry, depending on, you know.
Jealous.
jealous, right. I didn't think of that, bastards. You know, I think they play at caring about prices. I think they play at caring about unemployment. Does anybody really believe, even supporters of the Fed, does anybody really believe that if you lose your job, Jay Powell is crying a tear somewhere into his wine or beer or beverage of choice? No way. All of that is political cover. Mm-hmm. It's the smoke screen that, you know, they can use to justify whatever maneuver they want to, you know, pull. At the end of the day, I think they care about, and the reason why the Fed was founded was to enable the government and, of course, its crony, corporations to borrow and therefore spend more than they otherwise could, more than the government could raise in taxes, more than those corporations could get in, you know, honest revenues. And secondarily to that, to keep those cronies, particularly the crony banks, you know, solvent. And, you know, hiking interest rates does a number of things to undermine, you know, bank solvency, two of which are, one, that they've inverted the yield curve. So banks infamously or famously borrow using short-term markets, and they have to keep rolling over their funding at higher and higher rates as the rate is going up. And they use that funding to buy long-term assets, which, of course, are you know, already bought, and therefore they don't enjoy the higher asset price, but they the higher interest rate. Instead, they have a falling asset price on their asset side of their balance sheet. Mm-hmm. So their balance sheet, you know, has pressure because the assets are falling. The income statement has a pressure because the interest expense is rising. Mm-hmm. That's what rising interest rates is doing, or a yield curve inversion is doing to the banks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the other problem is that all of this rising interest rates and credit pullback is forcing all sorts of borrowers into default.
Right.
Every one of those defaults is now impacting the banks. Mm-hmm. And I think of it as like blowing holes in their balance sheet. And the Fed surely has to be watching that. And when the pain on the banks becomes too great, you know, unlike the pain of unemployed people, which I don't think they feel and I don't think they care, but the pain of the banks is going to be, especially the big crony banks, something that I think they're going to have to pay attention to. And the question is, when does that, you know, get to a point that they reverse? I don't know.
Yeah, nobody knows, I guess. And you're right. It's impossible to know. So all those zombie companies that have been held, you know, kept alive through infusions of money and lower interest rates for years and years are still there. And as you said, if they'd leave it go far enough, it probably would cure it. But they won't. They can't, because the pain is too intolerable. Well, let's get to maybe some pain relief for our investors in terms of investing in gold and your products that you at Monetary Metals have devised. You were the founder of Monetary Metals. You had a vision for what could be, so people can actually invest, I think, as little as 10 ounces of gold they can put up with you, and then become lenders, and I guess in a consortium or in a group, either leasing that gold or being a part of a gold bond. Is that right?
That's basically it. So deprived of interest in dollars, which are falling anyway, you know, people turn to gold, and our approach is they should get a return on that gold in exchange for doing something productive with it, rather than just hoarding it. You know, what makes the economy go around is finance a productive enterprise. And so we have two programs. We have a leasing program, which is open to all investors. Mm-hmm. Minimum investment is 10 ounces. As you say, you know, we present lease opportunities. Investors have a choice whether they want to participate or not in any given lease opportunity. Interest rates on that range from 2% to about 3%. That is net to the investor, and that's gold on gold. So if you put 100 ounces in, an interest rate of 3% means you get 103 ounces at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
A lease is where the company that's leasing the gold has physical inventory or work in progress. So we could go on site, scrape all the gold, put it on a scale, and it would weigh greater than the lease amount. So the gold is physically present. This is not a financial product involving leverage, hypothecation, or any of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
The gold is physically present, and that's how that works. We also have a product that we call the gold bond.
Mm-hmm.
And a bond is just that, it is lending. So in the case of a lease, it's not lending. The lease gold does not go on the balance sheet of the lessee. It's not their asset. If they were to declare bankruptcy, for example, we would repossess it in the same way that if you lease a car from General Motors, that doesn't go to, the car is not liquidated for the benefit of your creditors. General Motors will just simply repossess it.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the bond, which is accredited investors only, so I have to be careful talking too much in an open forum. Mm-hmm. That's just the way the securities regulations are in this country today. It is true lending. It does, the funds go on the balance sheet of the borrower. Mm-hmm. And typically we're financing mines, growth and expansion for refiners and vaults and others that are generating a gold income. And interest rates are much higher in the bonds than they are in leases. Obviously, there's greater risk.
Right.
But if you look at the dollar, there's one good thing about it, which is that there is quite a rich risk-return spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There's everything from holding cash, like in a bank safe deposit box, which has no return and, in theory, no risk other than the general currency risk. And then on the opposite extreme, I guess you could buy call options on a 3x leveraged ETF. And if you put $1 million into that, you would create a, multi-generational fortune, if I were right.
Yeah.
And there's a product in every risk bucket, or every slot along that spectrum.
Yeah.
There's thousands of different gradations. And the gold world has basically had two slots, which is you can buy gold metal, and I would include in that, futures and GLD and things like that. They're just different ways of holding gold metal. Or you can buy equities of mining companies, which is pretty far out on the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
Much higher risk. Obviously, the returns, if you get it right, can be enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we're doing is we're creating products that slot kind of in the middle. The lease is much closer to the near end of low risk and low return. The bond is somewhere out in the middle, higher risk and higher return, but lower risk than, the equity, right? If a company is failing, the bond hold, the lenders are repaid first before the shareholders would get anything.
Right. Exactly right. Now, Keith, with regard to, maybe just some people might want to just own gold and keep coins in their home or in their vault at home. Okay, that's all right, but someone can come in and rob you. That's a risk that you have. I mean, it might be considered the safest way to own gold, but you don't get any return on it, that's for sure, other than the appreciation against the currency. You can store gold coins. You could put it in a private vault. But as I understand it, if people enter into your program, they're not charged for a vault storage. Where if people put their money, their gold in a vault or silver in a vault, they're going to be charged a lot of money, right? But is that true that if people invest, say, 10 ounces of gold or whatever with you guys with monetary metals, they don't get charged for the gold that's not lent? Because we didn't get to this part, but how, if people put up those ounces, they have to bid on an interest rate. I mean, there's a bidding process, right, that allows a certain number of ounces that are in your program to be invested. Maybe you could clarify that, but the point is that in your program, you don't have to pay for vault storage in any.
That's right. If you have coins at home, you're taking the risk of theft or fire or flood, but you generally can't insure. I've called a number of insurance companies. You can't insure gold held at home. Mm. Because it's too easy to commit fraud against the insurance company.
Sure.
You don't have any cost, but on the other hand, there is that risk, and who knows what that risk is. If you live in an apartment in the middle of the city, that risk is probably a lot higher. If you have 50 acres, in a rural place, and you bury it in the backyard, that risk is probably pretty low. If you go to a professional depository, you will typically pay about 0.75% per year, mm-hmm. which doesn't necessarily sound like that much, but, that adds up over time. That gets old, after 10 years of that. I mean, if the gold price was going up at 25% per year, I think most people probably wouldn't care that much.
Yeah.
But if the gold price is, choppy and sideways and whatever, that gets pretty frustrating. And you're absolutely correct. In our program, we do not charge, storage fees for it. Of course, the intention in our program isn't long-term storage. It's to get it deployed productively into something that produces a return, in which case there's no storage fees. There's just a single, net interest rate that we quote. Now, you talk about the bidding process. We are, in the final stages of rolling out something that makes it a lot easier, and that is that an interest rate is presented, and then you just decide, do you want to participate or not?
Mm-hmm.
So all that bidding stuff goes away, which I think, there's some investors that kind of got excited about the game theory aspects of it. But I think, the more mainstream investors probably looked at it, rolled their eyes a little bit, said, okay, well, if I have to do that, I'll do that. But I mean, you're making me jump through hoops. Just make this easy, please. So we've listened to that feedback, and that's coming very soon.
Very good. I'll look forward to that. Well, let me ask you, Keith, before we run out of time here, I want to get your take on or your forecast for gold. You put out a very good report, a very thorough report in January, calling for, sort of forecasting the gold price. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about your methodology that you use in trying to determine in coming up with some sort of a forecast for gold. And just talk to us a little bit about what you were thinking in January and how that might or might not have changed between then and now.
So we look at the spread between futures and spot. The futures market is not a prediction market. It's not, what anybody per se thinks the price of gold is going to be in December or February or whatever. It's a carry market, meaning that if you want to buy a February future, then the person who signs up to give you that gold in February will typically, buy the gold, warehouse it, is locked in his buy price, he's locked in his sell price, and it's an arbitrage. Mm-hmm. So that difference between future and spot represents the cost of interest plus the cost of storage. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, as markets gyrate, the price can get pretty distorted from where that should be. Either spot is moving up or down, or futures are moving up or down. So based on that, in end of January, we put out the report. I think I basically said that we stand at a crossroads. Is the Fed really going to go through with this tightening and hiking of interest rates? And if so, that's not necessarily terribly bullish for gold.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely, definitely not bullish for silver.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened since then, and this is the really interesting thing, obviously the price of both metals has come down, not surprisingly. But what's interesting is, so both metals at that time, we calculate a fundamental price, based on trying to back out, theoretically, you look at the market price, which is comprised of both the spot buyers and sellers and the future buyers and sellers. And the buyers and sellers in the futures market are using leverage, and they're speculators, so they can distort the price. But if we could theoretically calculate how to back that effect out, then we'd be left with, okay, if the market was just physical, where would it clear at? And back at the end of January, the market clearing price was pretty close to, I don't remember exactly what the numbers were, but pretty close to the spot price. As the prices of the metals have moved down, the fundamentals have not moved down so much as the market price has. And now today we have a situation where both gold and silver, the gold fundamental price is $100 above the market. And in silver, it's more like $3.50 or something. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting is that silver has become very scarce to the market. Mm-hmm. Gold conditions are reasonably normal, if I could dare use that word to describe this bizarre environment that we're in which nothing is normal. Mm-hmm. But silver has become incredibly tight, and there is now a real serious backwardation in silver, which means a scarcity or shortage. So we put out a report yesterday based on Friday's data, and yesterday got even more extreme. We may put out another update if it gets even more extreme today when I look at the data. That backwardation is more serious than anything we've seen since the heart of the global financial crisis.
Ah, interesting.
So, which means, you know, there's potentially explosive upside to the silver price when the market is ready to respond to that tension. That could be quite a lot of force, you know, letting go like like if there's a cable under tension and you cut it, it doesn't just drop to the floor, right? There's a whiplash effect, and that whiplash could see, you know, $24 or $34. It depends. And of course, if there's a momentum that takes over as we had in 2010 through 2011, you know, $50.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So it must mean that there people want to get their hands. They need silver for one thing or another in manufacturing or maybe for monetary security. But I would guess more in the real world for manufacturing and so forth. And it's just not there. So they have to bid the price up for the physicals. That's what's happening, I guess, right?
And it's becoming increasingly scarce for whatever the reason. Uh-huh. Now, you know, regular listeners of your show may know, and certainly regular readers of our reports know, we have not exactly been perma bulls on gold or silver, and we've not necessarily been bullish on silver most of the time for most of the last decade or so. I don't think we've ever come out with a call this aggressive on silver that I can recall. This is a very unique moment in time.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that. We're really out of time, Keith. I'm sorry. I had a bunch more questions to ask you. Maybe we can do it again sometime in the near future. Folks, that is all the time we have this week. Next week, Bob Moriarty will be with me, as well as Quentin Henning, to talk about Lion One Metals. Bob will talk about the money revelation. That's how hyperinflation takes root. It's from an account in hyperinflationary Germany, and it was translated into English. Bob will be with me to talk about that next week. Keith, I want to thank you so much for being with us. And I want to tell all of you, go to monetarymetals.com. You can easily access the website by going to jtaylormedia.com or just click on the banner there. Keith, thank you so much for being with us. And folks, until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.